Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities with Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. One of the biggest stories this year has been President Trump's trade war with China and his on-again, off-again tariffs on other countries. All this is affecting businesses across the U.S. As Jung-Yoon Han from the New York Public News Network reports, it could mean higher prices for everything from clothes to fireworks.
Jack Yonnelly and his son run Belotch & Company in Albany. It's a clothing store that's been around since 1867.
And I have customers that come in, and they might be in their 90s, and they say, well, since I was a little girl, I've shopped here. My mother used to bring me in here, all right? And that is very rewarding.
In addition to everyday clothes, they sell scrubs for hospital workers in the Capital Region and student uniforms for about 30 schools across the state, and handkerchiefs.
And I have older customers that wipe their nose with a handkerchief like my mother did.
This time of year, Yonnelly is usually busy placing orders for the summer, but he has a problem. A lot of these goods are made in China.
One of my main resources that I ordered from said, Jack, I can hold prices through the end of April. I have stock in this country. I can't promise after that because I don't know.
Yonnelly says that uncertainty is all because of President Donald Trump's escalating trade war with China and his baseline 10% import tax on goods from most other countries.
My prices on embroidered polo shirts at this point are $11.99. I've been $11.99 for 8 years, and I don't want to have customers coming in here where I have to have it at $14.99, because all I'll hear from them is, why?
This is precisely the question that New York businesses have to answer. Do they raise their prices, eat their costs, or something in between? And what if, in the case of Young Explosives in the Finger Lakes, their customers booked their services months ago?
I probably will put some sort of surcharge on a show. May it be, I'm just guessing, maybe 8%, maybe.
That's Jim Young. He runs a family business in Canandaigua. They put on more than 500 fireworks shows a year, weddings, baseball games, and, of course, the 4th of July.
We actually mix the chemicals, and we actually make those shells that are the bang, the big bangs at the end, typically. So we really get into that. So.
But about 80% of the fireworks used in their shows are ordered and shipped here from China. Young recently placed 3 orders from factories there. One shipment arrived as the first wave of tariffs kicked in, so it came with a 25% tariff. Another is en route, and he isn't sure what the import tax will be. The third, he canceled because of the financial uncertainty.
To the towns or cities that you work with, like, have you given them any notices, and what have they said?
I have not, and I wrestled what I want to say, because I feel bad having to tell people, and I'm not sure what I'm going to say exactly. Like I told you earlier, though, the one good thing is it's not a surprise.
Young says he voted for Trump, and he had a feeling tariffs would come eventually, seeing how much Trump talked about them on the campaign trail. He says he wishes the president would have implemented a more gradual approach, but he's optimistic it could help rebuild some aspects of American manufacturing. Yonnelly agrees it's a worthwhile goal.
That's what the president is trying to push for, I know. This country has changed from being a manufacturing country to a service country. I mean, we don't make products. So it's a wonderful idea, but I don't know at what cost.
Democrats are planning to force a vote in the U.S. Senate next week to reverse Trump's tariffs. Young and other people in the pyrotechnics industry, meanwhile, are seeking relief, asking Trump to exempt fireworks from the tariffs. Young says hopefully Trump will do so before his next shipment arrives. In Albany, I'm Jung-Yoon Han for the New York Public News Network.
You are are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. This week, I sat down with State Assembly Majority Leader Crystal Peoples-Stokes, where I began by asking her about the status of the current budget negotiations.
Well, it looks like we're closer than we were when we started, much closer. Not thinking that there'll be anything that'll necessarily be voted on this week, but I do anticipate that the budget should be complete by next week.
And what about Governor Hochul, of course, a fellow Democrat, the governor who has said, you know, it doesn't really matter whether the budget is on time or not if I don't get my agenda items in the budget. What do you think about those comments?
Well, I think my friend is starting from a good purpose, but I'm not so sure that is necessarily the correct way to go. I think a budget document should be filled with a lot of numbers as opposed to a ton of policy. And so, you know, when you start out from a policy perspective, then you've got to get over 100 or so people agreeing with you on that policy. And to assume that that would happen just because you put it in the budget is not a fair assumption. And so this is where we are.
Yeah, one of the items that's been holding up the budget has been the issue of discovery, the amount of evidence that has to be provided in a criminal case. And the governor seems to want to change those rules. Where are you on this whole issue of discovery?
Well, I'm not in total disagreement with the original discovery bill that was passed, but I do know that, you know, in a government where compromise is required, on a regular basis, that you perhaps sometimes need to revisit things. And so I think the revisiting that we've been through as a legislature under the leadership of the speaker and an amazing staff, I think, you know, we've come to a place where the governor can agree that she's gotten what she wanted to see and that we are still in a position where we protect the people who really need, you know, social justice.
Yeah, and one of the things that the governor has talked about is affordability for New Yorkers, and the idea of giving people $500 inflation refunds, basically. Is that something that New York State can do at a time when now we have so much uncertainty coming down from the federal government?
Well, from my perspective, I actually agree with you that we do not know what's coming from the federal government. And for that reason, we might need to hold whatever surplus we have in order to deal with that. However, you know, the governor is entitled to her opinion. I'm not confident necessarily that, you know, it's the best decision, but sometimes you have to, you know, go with the flow. I know that many of the people who I represent would love to see a $500 check. In fact, it would help their families a lot deal with the many issues that they are dealing with now, you know, rent, you know, children in school, things that they may need, utilities and all that sort of thing. So I get it that people do need those resources. But if we are hit with a major impact from the federal government, we're going to need to try and make up some of that somewhere. And so I think it puts us in a position where we'll have to think longer and harder about how we continue to deliver services to the people of our state should the federal government choose not to do so.
Yeah, and I'm guessing that will mean, because it seems to me it's quite obvious, I've been asking folks I've been talking to on the Capitol Connection weekly about this, and this includes now you, New York State Assembly Majority Leader Crystal Peoples-Stokes. Are we going to end up in a special session? It seems like, because of the uncertainty, that's where we're going to end up. We may have to revise plans. We may have to pull from the rainy day fund.
We'll have to do what we have to do, David. I'm hoping that in spite of how where the federal government is leaning now, I'm hopeful that perhaps, you know, they will see the light and stop doing things that are destructive to the lives of the people, not just New York State, but to the people of America.
I noticed some of your colleagues have introduced a bill. It's called the Reciprocal Enforcement of Claims on Unpaid or Reduced State Entitlements or Recourse Act, and is one of two bills that were introduced in March by State Senator Jessica Ramos and Assemblymember Michael Lasher that are meant to provide the state with some leverage against the Trump administration's hostile attitude toward New York State. Any idea whether that's got any legs?
Well, you know what? I'm not sure why a gentleman like Trump, who has, you know, risen to the role of president of the United States for the second time with 32 felonies, would be so interested in being negative towards the state, the home state from which he is from. You know, I hope that, again, that at some point he'll, you know, change his mind about why he needs to be vengeful and why he needs to, you know, hurt people by trying to hurt a certain individual. I don't think it's the smartest thing to do for a president or anyone else. I believe in karma. I think what you put out, you will end up getting back. And, you know, I think he can vote much better for himself and our country if he would start to treat people fairly.
Well, and one of the New Yorkers that's in his administration now is Lee Zeldin, former Republican candidate for governor. Didn't do so badly in that gubernatorial election. However, he's now the head of the EPA. He's the EPA administrator. You know, it's the Environmental Protection Agency tasked with protecting the environment, and he's removing environmental protection rules. And now they're coming after New York State and their environmental legislation. You know, you have the New York Superfund Act. And, of course, this session, you guys are looking at the New York Heat Act, which your colleague in the Senate, Liz Krueger, wants to pass. And yet there's pushback on that, saying it'll raise energy costs, while others are saying it'll help New York's energy issues.
Well, I mean, you really have to think this one through in many ways. I'm not sure why Lee Zeldin doesn't realize the impacts that major climate events have had on not just people's lives in the state of New York, but quite frankly, the economy. The state of New York has had to put out multiple millions of dollars in order to deal with the results of storms and floods, et cetera, et cetera. It's not inexpensive to put infrastructure back in place that has been destroyed by the climate. So if you understand that climate change really impacts us as taxpayers and it impacts the lives of people, why would you want to stop opportunities to begin protecting us against those things? I'm not really sure what that mindset means, but I do know that, you know, as it relates to the HEAT Act, if you force companies to spend multiple millions of dollars, for instance, in Buffalo, putting, you know, utility supplies underground, it's going to cost a lot of money. And I don't know that that's something that government can or should fund. But I do know that if businesses have that sort of increase in their final costs, they are going to push that on to the consumer.
That's State Assembly Majority Leader Crystal Peoples Stokes. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York Congresswoman Elise Stefanik is pressing the U.S. Department of Education to investigate the Saratoga Springs City School District. But the district says it has done nothing wrong. The Legislative Gazette's Aaron Shella Levine reports.
Republican Elise Stefanik, whose sprawling 21st district includes portions of the Saratoga Springs City School District, wrote to Education Secretary Linda McMahon asking the DOE's Office for Civil Rights to investigate. In March, the Board of Education passed a resolution titled Affirming Our Support for Every Student in a 7-1 vote with one abstention. The three-page document affirms the district's commitment to state laws, support for immigrant and transgender students, and includes a call to action to ensure every student feels valued, respected, and empowered to succeed. Caitlin Wheeler is an ambassador for the Riley Gaines Center, an organization advocating to keep transgender athletes out of youth and college sports. Founder Riley Gaines, a former University of Kentucky swimmer, began speaking out against trans athletes' participation in sports after tying for fifth place against a trans athlete at a 2022 NCAA competition. Wheeler spoke at a board meeting this month.
Title IX has protected girls for the past 50 years, and President Trump's new executive order reinforces that truth. Boys do not belong in girls' bathrooms, locker rooms, or sports. Period. But the Saratoga Springs Board's policy that was just voted on in an incredible number, a 7-1 vote, in lack of support of women, this vote was on March 27th, that violated the law. Even worse, it ignores the voices of every girl in this room, every girl in this state, in this school district, it claims to protect.
Emmanuel Sorenza has practiced pediatric health in the region for nearly three decades and is the district's physician advisor. Speaking at the same meeting, he says concerns over the safety of female athletes in the district is a manufactured controversy.
These issues have always been handled, I can reassure everybody in this room, with the greatest amount of sensitivity to everybody's needs, each child, gay, straight, cis, whatever. They've always been handled with each child's best interests in mind.
The district receives more than $3 million in federal funding, and officials remain skeptical of any cuts. All of the district's federal funding is congressionally appropriated, meaning it's only amendable by an act of Congress. Board President Angie Mecca says March's resolution didn't introduce any new policies to the district.
It's a resolution that's been in place for a while. We felt like the time was right to reaffirm it, to signal to our students and the community and the parents that, you know, we do stand by it and that they're safe coming to our schools. And again, the majority of the board felt like it was the right thing to do to affirm that. We've had an overwhelming amount of support.
Emeka says the district continues to follow all relevant laws.
The school district still is adhering to all applicable laws, including Title IX, New York State Education Law, Dignity for All Students Acts, New York State Human Rights Laws, and even the Public School Athletic Association. There's nothing that we are willfully ignoring or not adhering to. We stand by our statement. It was the right thing to do, and it still is.
In a statement, the district says it remains, quote, committed to fostering a safe, inclusive, and respectful learning environment for every student, end quote. Stefanik has requested an investigation into whether the resolution violates Title IX under President Trump's Keeping Men Out of Women's Sports executive order. In a statement, the congresswoman said, quote, allowing biological males into girls' sports and locker rooms is in direct violation of President Trump's executive order. Our daughters should not be forced to compete against biological men in competitive sports or share a locker room with biological men, end quote. WAMC has requested comment from the New York State and U.S. Departments of Education. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Aaron Shello Levine.
A food bank in New York's Hudson Valley says it's already struggling to stock shelves as a result of funding cuts at the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The Legislative Gazette's Jesse King with more.
As the Trump administration works to slash federal spending, the USDA has cut more than $1 billion in funding from two programs, one sourcing produce for schools and another for food banks called the Emergency Food Assistance Program, or TFAP. The Regional Food Bank of Northeastern New York, which distributes food to local pantries, opened a large warehouse in Montgomery last year to increase its capacity in the Hudson Valley. CEO Tom Nardacci says a single tractor trailer from the USDA contains 35,000 pounds of food. The food bank typically receives 200 trucks a year, but thanks to increased TFAP funding under the Biden administration, it saw more than 400 trucks in 2024. That's 14 million pounds of food sourced from farms across the country by the USDA. On Monday, however, the shelves in Montgomery looked pretty bare. Nardacci says they've already seen 27 shipments canceled as a result of the recent cuts to TFAP.
That's the food that agencies want, that pantries want, that people want, because it's first-rate, high-quality, right from the farm, right from the distributor food. Stuff we already ordered. So this isn't future, this isn't down the road, this is right now. We had 27 loads of food canceled.
Nardacci says food insecurity has spiked since the COVID-19 pandemic. The food bank delivered a total of 54 million pounds of food last year, its busiest year behind 2020. A recent poll by Siena College and SUNY New Paltz found 6 in 10 households are currently living paycheck to paycheck in Ulster, Sullivan, Dutchess, and Orange counties alone. New York Congressman Pat Ryan, a Democrat from the 18th District, says this is a clear example of how cuts in federal spending are hitting close to home. He invited a bipartisan group of lawmakers to the Montgomery warehouse to hear from Nardacci and farmers like Jeff Crist. Crist owns Crist Bros Orchards, a five-generation apple farm in Walden. He says TFAP is not only good for food banks, it's good for business.
Our farm ships about 24,000 pounds of apples to now this facility, formerly over in Cornwall, that we grow in Orange and Ulster counties, and that's every month. This will negatively impact farmers across the country.
Nardacci says New York may be able to partially plug the gap. Governor Kathy Hochul has proposed universal free school meals as part of her 2026 budget, which lawmakers are still negotiating. But Nardacci says it's unlikely the state can fund the 7 million additional pounds of food it expected from the federal government this year. The food bank does a lot to source food on its own, including rescuing food tossed by local grocery stores, but Nardacci says it's not enough.
We deserve to know what the plan is, because we're doing everything we possibly can. We're doing it all. My staff is, we're so tired. It has been nonstop since COVID. We're up at night, 3 o'clock in the morning, you wake up, you think about it, you know, and we just need to know some level of certainty.
Ryan says the USDA cuts will amount to roughly 2 million meals denied to 120,000 residents in the 18th district. Assemblymember Brian Marr, a Republican from the 101st district who previously served as the town supervisor of Montgomery, says hunger should not be a partisan issue. He says he's reached out to his fellow Republicans to urge the government to restore the funding.
My talking points to those that will listen to me at the federal level in the administration and those that are in Congress is when you make cuts, you can't just take an axe. There needs to be more precision, because with every cut in funding that you make, it does have a multiplier effect that down the road will cost us more money in the long run.
As for Ryan, he says there are multiple avenues Congress can take to require the USDA to reinstate the funding, but they all require at least 3 majority House Republicans to get on board.
I mean, the money is already appropriated, so they literally just need to turn it back on. There's no even congressional action required. It's more about putting pressure on the administration to do what they've already been directed by Congress to do. But right now, the Congress is totally just lockstep behind the president and not, I think in a very unhealthy way, not doing their constitutional duty of checks and balances.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Jesse King.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Fort Ticonderoga is planning a number of events to commemorate the 250th anniversary of the Revolutionary War. The first starts May 9th and coincides with the anniversary of Ethan Allen's capture of the fort. Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley explains.
On May 10, 1775, Ethan Allen and the Green Mountain Boys conducted a dawn raid and captured the then British-controlled Fort Ticonderoga. President and CEO Beth Hill says the upcoming No Quarter 3-day reenactment is the first in a series of events to celebrate the 250th anniversary of the American Revolution.
Fort Ticonderoga has been planning this momentous time for our nation, America's 250th, for more than a decade. We have built one of the premier interpretive programs in the nation and have tested concepts that now we are bringing to life in a really exciting way during America's 250th. All of this translates into major new exhibitions, our battle reenactments, as well as our real-time revolution, which is an immersive historical experience every day through this 250th period.
Fort Ticonderoga's real-time revolution through 2027 will showcase day-by-day events as they happened at the birth of the nation. Hill says the fort is unique in that it was the site of the most concentrated military activity in 18th century America.
What we are able to do, not just for a one-time battle reenactment, but our ability to take that story as it's evolving in real time really sets us apart.
Hill turns to curator Matt Cagle to continue.
New York has the claim to having perhaps the most battles, engagements fought in the Revolutionary War within the bounds of the current state of New York. But Ticonderoga represents concentrated 3 years minimum of military activity ongoing throughout the Revolutionary War, where from 1775 until 1777, American soldiers figure out how to create, how to raise, how to maintain, how to equip, how to supply an army hundreds of miles from the major colonial centers along the coast. And so it becomes this kind of massive but microcosm of the revolutionary experience. And we are trying in various ways to convey that through our program during the 250th.
Green Mountain Boys reenactors will begin in Vermont and march the route to Shoreham, where they will cross Lake Champlain in a nighttime raid. Along the way, the reenactors will stop in communities and schools to detail the history they are portraying. Cagle says the No Quarter event in May will be portrayed at the same scale and time that the historic event occurred.
So about 80 Green Mountain Boys crossed the lake under Arnold and Allen's command. We've got them portrayed almost to the man, as well as the British garrison, which was less than 50 soldiers, as well as almost 26 women and children who were the families of that garrison. We're going to have them portrayed to scale.
The No Quarter event will also feature new exhibits with nearly 100 artifacts that have never been displayed. Cagle says they are part of the fort's Revolutionary Anthology program that will rotate nearly all of their 200,000 artifacts over the next 5 years.
These include things like incredibly rare survivals of Revolutionary War uniforms. Fort Ticonderoga holds the oldest American-made military coat in existence. It was actually created before the Revolution by a militia company in Boston commanded by John Hancock. We'll have artwork. We'll also have objects that explore the weaponry from the time period, from the French, the German, the British, and the American forces as well, alongside these rare survivals and documentary pieces, books, manuscripts as well.
Again, Beth Hill.
Monumental events happened that shaped the world that we live in. And the same is true with seeing objects that bore witness. You were as close as you could get to that moment through that object. And we're so honored and thrilled, you know, that we have these collections to connect our audiences with the past in such a magnificent way.
Fort Ticonderoga is near the southern end of Lake Champlain. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. We had help from the New York Public News Network. You can listen anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcast. Look for program number 2517. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina. Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.